Hey guys, you're listening to the Anti-Marketing Podcast. Today I have Najeeb Khan as my co-host.
Hey.
And Liz Darling with Darling and Dapper.
Good morning.
Liz, one of the many, many, many reasons I asked you to come on, not just because you're a wonderful friend and an awesome human, is because I have had the wonderful fortune of you doing my hair for the last, as we just discovered, 9 years.
Almost a decade.
That's crazy. Know. Yeah, much older now. but I have seen your business grow and change and develop from a smaller three-chair space off Bird Neck Road.
Shoebox.
Yeah. To a much larger space on Bird Neck Road.
Yeah.
To a giant space off Laskin.
Yep.
And for those of you that don't know, that's all in Virginia Beach. And that journey is so interesting because it started where it did and then has ended up being what I imagine to be so much more than you could have thought or wanted, or maybe it's exactly what you wanted. But tell me more about how you started, because I know some of the story. Najeeb knows none of the story.
True.
So tell me where it started.
It started in 2000, probably seven, whenever I realized that I was hating the insurance world. I used to work at Geico.
And
I think that was probably when it all started coming to a head, because I was bored and that's not my world and I did not belong in it. And prior to that, I was all over the place. I went to art school in Boston, and I studied photography and painting, and I still paint and all these things. And my mother was the one that was like, you hate this. Go to hair school. You should be doing things with your hands and people and blah, blah, blah. And I was not very kind about that sentiment. I was like, I'm not 16 and pregnant. I'm not going to hair school. And then come to find out, like 6 months later, I was like, oh my God, Mom, I have the best idea. She was like, cool. Hair school, right on.
thing that I told you should do.
Yeah, exactly. And there was, I don't know, there were so many people that were involved in my class with me that were dramatically younger, both age and mentality. And I started this journey when I was like 24, so I was old enough to not behave the same way everyone else was, which I think gave me a leg up on the idea that you get out of it what you put into it. And because I was putting my whole life and world into, you know, the art of learning cosmetology and come to find out later the idea of the fact that I could actually be an entrepreneur. I flourished really quickly, but discovered that I'm really good at doing updos. And that was like, I can sculpt and I can do things like that. And towards graduation, whenever I was like really focusing on styling and stuff like that, my the owner of the school was like, you should totally focus a little bit more on color and cutting, because you're never going to make money doing updos. And I was like, oh, pumpkin. So then, like, 15 months later, I opened Behind the Veil.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are. So.
So when you opened Behind the Veil, Darling and Dapper is now what Behind the Veil?
Used to be. Yeah.
Where were you? How did it start?
So there were a couple different stepping stones, not a lot. I quickly learned that I don't work well for others. I work really well with others, but as far as like somebody telling me what to do, it's not usually my jam. And right whenever I graduated, or right before I graduated, I got recruited by a salon that was like, it's still around and it's super cool from the outside. It's like everything that I thought I should be a part of, and it was rad, and I got there, and then I realized, like, unless you are the owner's daughters, then fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, like, I got shit on so hard, and it was so lame, because I really wanted to flourish there, and they weren't having any of it, and so I left, and then I went to a more corporate world, and I learned so much about everything that I wanted to do with a business and what I should not do with a business. And both of those situations gave me exactly what I needed to do and who I am now. And because I had my babies back to back, when I was at the other, like the more corporate salon, I kept going on maternity leave, and I kept losing all my clients. And it was just, like, it was challenging because they wanted to stay with me, but I couldn't stay around. And so when River was probably 3 or 4 months old, I started just working out of my house because it was easier. And then that lasted for maybe 2 months before I started Hair and Makeup by Liz, because I was like, I need to do weddings. And when I was at that salon that I couldn't stay in for very long because the, you know, the whole baby thing, they kept passing me all the weddings. Like, they would get requests, but nobody there would do weddings. It's a different beast compared to just doing hair. And so I realized, like, this is my niche. I should absolutely be doing this. And so that's why I started my little, like, rinky-dink GoDaddy website for Hair Makeup by Liz. And not shortly thereafter, there was, like, one really big event that contacted me that found me on it. And long story short, that particular bride, I have now done their family's weddings. I've done 7 of them. And who knew? And I still do a lot of their hair now, just, like, cuts and colors and stuff. So I would like to attest a lot of, maybe not necessarily the success, but, like, the momentum of this particular family. They were so great. And so one thing led to another, and being involved in the wedding world, like, I very quickly inserted myself into every networking group and every wedding planner and every photographer. Like, anyone I could meet, I'd be, like, octopus to the face. Yeah. Like, hey, hi, I'm Liz, you should know me, hey. Yeah. And it happened really quickly, and Jennifer Lalonde was one of the ones that trusted me enough to, you know, refer me to her brides and have me meet everyone that I could meet via her, which is where Isis, can you say that out loud? Like,
I know.
Ilea, whatever, but it was Isis. Look, at the time.
It was. So there's a networking group in Hampton Roads called ISIS. It stands for International Special Events Society. So this was before the
terrorist group. And then the terrorist group came around, and you guys were like,
they were like, screw you.
Yeah.
So it got rebranded to ILEA.
Right.
Yeah. Which I don't even know what that means.
International Live Events Association.
Live events. I'm like, League of Extraordinary. No, okay. Whatever. So long story short, Jennifer Lalonde had me, or Schumacher, whatever, had me come to her space to meet her bride so I could, like, have a consultation and blah, blah, blah. Bride was a little bit late, so she's, like, showing me around her space. And she's like, what do you think? Do you, like, how do you feel about what this is? And I was like, it's cool. Like, mm-hmm. It's the bridal dish. Rock on. And she was like, no, I need to, like, sublet it. I gotta go. Do you want it? I was like, no. I have infants and no idea what I'm doing with my life. And then a week later, I signed the lease. And, you know, that was my shoebox on Birdneck for 9 years. Which is insane to think about that amount of time, but
I totally forgot that it was Jennifer's space before it was your space.
Yeah.
I have, like, distinct memories of the first time coming to that space. It was November of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the date? You might know the date.
If I had to guess, I would say it was, like, the 20th.
Yeah. She's really, and it probably was because it was very close to
Thanksgiving.
Yeah. She's like a savant.
I'm a little Rain Man when it comes to dates, but that's only because, like, of planning and, like, staring at a calendar for hours on end for all of my weddings. So, like,
how challenging was it having infants, right? Children in diapers, and then, like, being thrust into business and saying, I'm going to rent this thing and I'm going to make it work. And you said 9 years, right? She was there?
I was there, for 9 years. I think on paper, it was challenging. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It was challenging. I think I blacked out for a solid 5 years. And then woke up and I was like, cool, you guys can feed yourself for a second? Right on. But, like, honestly, it was survival mode. I was in a horribly abusive relationship. And I knew that subconsciously, if I didn't do this, then I was gonna die. Like, there was no good that was gonna come out of doing anything other than this. And it brought me light, and it made me feel, you know, worth it. And then just staring at those two little creatures, I was just like, I gotta do something. And it just so happened that it, you know, coalesced with passion, which is, I'm grateful for every day, because you can do anything, and you can make money and figure it out, but, like, to be able to do something that gives you life again and makes you feel whole, it's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And I can, like, attest, like, to that day, whatever day it was that I came in, my hair was dyed black. Box black, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry. And you're like, yeah, you're going to be here for a while. And I was like, all right. I don't know you, but okay. And I was, I mean, she had to do some crazy nonsense to my hair to rid it of the bad things that mm-hmm. I had done to it. Mm-hmm. And I left and I was like, holy crap.
Didn't we make it pink that day? Wasn't it?
That wasn't, so that was the day you made it look like fall.
Oh, that's right. We started with copper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it was like, it literally looked like the fall leaves. There was like pops of red in it and it was copper.
So you went from like emo.
Yeah.
To nice, like, fall colors, mm-hmm. beautiful hair. Mm-hmm. How many hours was that? I'm going to call it a procedure because
it wasn't
basically
it was hair rehab. I think it was probably no more than three, but oof.
But for me, who, like, doesn't or didn't, mm-hmm. doesn't is not the word anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm just going to hang out in this cute little spot. So I think about that, right? And I think about my story and mm-hmm. meeting you and like how I met you and started coming, which I didn't actually say. So you came and did an updo for me for a wedding. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, you should do my hair. How many stories like that exist for you? Because I feel like it just mm-hmm. has to be a ton.
Thousands.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's another thing I'm super grateful for is like the amount of lives that I touch and mold or have integrated myself into. I think there's a lot to be said about that, and mostly that's what keeps me going whenever things are challenging or, you know, there's a pesky pandemic or things that just kind of come out of the blue. I am grateful that I can have some kind of ongoing relationship with people that just needed something, and they might not have necessarily known what they needed, but it was just to feel important, to feel seen, to feel beautiful whenever they couldn't necessarily get themselves there on their own. Like, that's what it is. And I think that word of mouth is always going to be something that is the best kind of networking. It's the best kind of, you know, marketing, right? So when people tell their stories like that, then it single-handedly, like, gets the other people that need to feel mm-hmm. that way. And I think that's probably one of my biggest testimonies is that it is always going to be something that sticks around, whether I see you one time or I see you every 6 weeks. Like, I love that about my job. And so there are countless stories like that.
Well, and it's funny, like, so I second shot a wedding last weekend, and I walked in and I got complimented on my bangs, which are like my pride and joy. I've had these bad boys since Liz, we cut them straight once and we immediately didn't do that again, and it was my idea, not hers.
Sometimes we just have to learn. It's okay.
Yeah.
Learn by doing.
Yeah.
Trial by fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or by thinking you're a stylist when you're not. And on my part. But I walked in and they were like, oh my gosh, like, how do your bangs look so, like, they didn't even say hi to me.
They said hi to your bangs.
They said hi to my bangs. That's your cool. bangs look amazing. And I'm like, oh, my pride and joy.
That's a huge compliment.
Yeah. I was like, I just got a haircut the other day. Like, what, you know, Liz is wonderful. And they were like, and then the other photographer there, Brian, he was like, yeah, you know, like, Liz, it just did your hair. And they're like, wait, she does cuts too? And they were instantly like, I'm trying to go see Liz. I'm like, well, you should have been seeing her for a very long time. Hook you up.
I think my favorite part of that story is that what you just left out there. They were like, our Liz? And you were like, my Liz?
That is what I said. Yeah, that yeah. I said. Yeah. Our Liz? My Liz. But sure.
Yeah.
Your Liz.
We'll share.
Of the thousands of people that you work with or have worked with throughout your career, how do you keep all the stories in your head and all those relationships? Because, I mean, your business, just as much as any other business, is relationship-driven, mm-hmm. right? A lot of these people come back to you because they enjoy working with you, they enjoy your style, they enjoy who you are as a person, but they also expect some level of, like, she knows me.
Yeah.
Right? And how do you keep all those things in your head and
you know,
able
I
to compartmentalize all that?
It's probably implode. Twofold. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say I don't, because I do implode all the time. But I think one factor about being a good stylist and being able to, like, listen, right? Like, we want to listen. We want to be heard. That's the part of the consultation that, like, most stylists fuck up on, and then it's all downhill from there. But if you're listening and you're hearing them, then you're good. But I am a very good chameleon, and I don't know if that's good or bad, truthfully, because I can shape my personality to fit like who was ever in my chair. So like I can be relatable to just about anybody, and I don't, again, I don't know that I'm really proud of that. Like it's
you should be. It's actually like the mark of like a good person, like to be able to be like, you know, I don't have this, I might not have everything in common with this person, but I can like find mm-hmm. some common ground. Mm-hmm. That's not.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it freaks me out because it like borderline's fake, which I'm not being, but like it's good to be able to just be relatable. And there are so many different personalities and people and stories and things that sit in my chair, so I'm just like, I can fit myself into that. But whenever I don't have to try so hard, and it is relatable because I have seen so many things just in my own life, and been through so many things and done so much stuff, like, it's the ones that you can really connect with. And a good relationship foundation is somebody that you can, like, connect with right away, and it doesn't have to feel forced or tried. And right. I feel like because I can achieve that fairly quickly, it's hard to forget. You know, it doesn't matter if I see you once a year or once every month. I appreciate those types of connections because they're rare. And I think that, you know, we need to value that in this day and age because of the lack of connection in things and relationships via social media or texting or, you know, with everything being so fast-paced and, I guess, shunned because you're always trying to get to the next thing and the next place and the next person and the next dollar. Like, I like that things slow down a little bit in my salon, and they are true. Like, you're sitting here, and you're probably going to be with me for a minute, so, like, let's just put all the shit aside and be friends for a minute.
Right.
You know? So I think it's easy to remember those stories and those types of people. I can't necessarily keep them at the top of my list of being able to recall, like, right away what happened on June 8th, 2014, but, like, maybe I could.
I was like, huh, you definitely
maybe
know.
I could. But I think that I always joke that I could absolutely write a book at the end of this because there are so many good things, so many crazy things, so many outlandish, awesome situations that I have come across. And I think because those stories keep building and compiling, that's what makes me even more relatable, because while they might not be my stories, I can definitely throw something crazy your mm-hmm. way to make you feel more normal.
So, example, I'm going to give an example of Liz's story recall mm-hmm. without saying more than I should. So, she was doing my hair the other day, and she was like, so I had this crazy story of, like, fate that I needed to tell you. I'm not going to, like, go into too much depth. But she was like, October 16th, 2015.
18th.
Oh, God, I love that you know my own story.
It's a very specific.
It is. Welcome is my business anniversary. It's the 20th, so that feels right and makes sense. She's like, you called me, and I was wearing this shirt, and I was standing on the corner of this place to tell me that you were opening a business. And ironically, on, like, the 18th, was it the 18th? No, it was just you were in the same spot,
yeah.
the same shirt.
Yeah.
She was like, I was in the same spot, in the same shirt, and then had this whole other epiphany, and, like, remembers things from 6 years ago. She remembers things that are impactful because she finds ways to relate to them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that is cool. That is not... It was funny, I was being you the other day, and I felt really proud of myself. We got together with my team, and we're talking about stuff. And I said, on this date and this exact, and they're like, what? Like, I'm being Liz Darling somehow. Like, I knew all the dates.
Yeah, but it's also like a hallmark of a good individual who actually cares and listens, mm-hmm. right? I think that's the one thing that a lot of people lose in the midst of being, moving forward and being in business is, like, you have to stop and be a human being for a minute and just strip out this idea of, like, I'm working. Mm-hmm. And if you can just be genuine and just be relatable and all those, you know, adjectives that we throw out there,
yeah.
then it makes it easier for that 9-hour day or 10-hour day to fly by.
Or 15-hour day.
Right.
Or 15-hour day.
Especially as of late. I think that is definitely one characteristic that makes me really good at my job, but makes my job really challenging. Because you, when you care so much, like, it shows. And whenever you are involving yourself so heavily, like, people feel that and they appreciate it, and most of the time that's really great. But on the off chance that you are just meant to be either a therapist or an emotional punching bag because you don't you, as in, like, the client doesn't have anywhere else to go or any other outlet. Like, we end up being that. And that's okay until it becomes your problem. Like, if they are not happy with themselves, but they want to turn it around and make it your fault or your problem, and that amount of caring that, and, you know, amount of yourself that you put into something, that doesn't go away whether they're happy or not, you know? And so when they are not happy, you carry that around, and it is world-shattering, and it sucks. And I think that not everyone can understand that. When you love what you do and you love everybody that sits in your chair, and it turns around and it ends up being something not great, whether it's something that you did or you didn't do, I think people forget that we are human too. And while we are so super on board to be that therapist or that kind of like outlet session, it weighs on you. And with the whole pandemic and all of the things that have been taken away from us, as far as like the ones that go to work and come home and go to work, like, we are drained. Like, we don't have an outlet to fill up our own cup because we are actively filling up everyone else's. And so when there's not an outlet for you, it becomes so much more challenging. So that's what I'm working on right now, trying to figure out how to fill up my own cup, because it is exhausting.
Well, I think it's hard too, because you get caught up as a business owner on top of being therapist, counselor, stylist, all the things. You get caught up in the numbers. And so you're coming off like a year of a pandemic, and you're like, I gotta do all the things that I was doing when I was Hair by Liz.
Right.
To continue. But a pandemic isn't maternity leave.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I think everybody felt that feeling of, like, oh shit, I've gotta like work really hard and or I'm gonna be screwed.
I mean, we're almost a year or more in now, but like, we're, everyone, myself included, are still trying to catch up.
Yeah.
Because shit got real for a second. Like,
all right.
Real, real.
Right. Like, couldn't go in for a while. Could go in. And, like, that's... So thinking about, like, that, but then also thinking about the really good stuff. When you went from behind the veil in your box, in your shoebox on Bird Neck, it's so funny because I would, like, never would have thought of it that way. It's just a cute little place, and there's a little window and a pretty mirror, and it's blue.
It's very blue.
It was
well, teal, whatever.
It's very pretty.
It's mint.
Yeah. when you go from that to Vail Studios to Darling and Dapper.
Well, Vail Studios back to Behind the Veil.
Back to Behind the Veil, and then to Darling and Dapper. Talk to me about, like, all that. So, you know, we've talked about, like, the pandemic, like, more recently, and, like, how that's been affecting. But, like, 15 years of trying to fill up your cup.
Yeah.
Where do you find it in all of that?
I drink a lot. Can I say that?
That's the honest answer.
No, I would, like, you know, like normal people, I would take a vacation. I would, you know, carve out at least 10 days a year where I am unplugged and out. Like, can't reach me. But because I haven't been able to do that, it's a lot harder now. But I don't know. I think I thrive under pressure, and I get really excited, and even maybe a little bit more creative whenever things are chaotic. It's not necessarily the most healthy outlet. But I do best whenever shit is crazy. And there's only been one time where things got a little bit too crazy and I had to backpedal, maybe two times rather. But, like, the backpedaling, the very first time I had to do that was a little debilitating. It made me question, like, if I was a fraud. It made me feel like I shouldn't be doing this. I have no business. But, like, let me backtrack. So when we were Behind the Veil, and then I expanded to Vail Studios and added 10 employees and receptionists and all of that shit, and I didn't know what end was up. And at that point, I had had a business partner for about, I don't know, 11 or 13 months. And within that time frame, that's whenever we expanded, and everything was going so well because we had, like, 54 or something weddings in the first year, which is great. But then the second year, we had like 280. And I was like, oh God, we need a bigger boat.
Yeah.
And so I took over the next unit, created Vail, created all these employees and all this stuff. And unbeknownst to me, I relied too heavily on my business partner to keep up with me and to keep up with the growth and all these things. But she was not cut out for that. And I was not cut out to have a business partner. So gave her a choice. I was like, this is going to end regardless. So I'll either give you this and I'll go start my own thing, or you got to go. And she went. And so by that point, I was like, I don't know how to say, it's like saving a sinking ship with a spoon. I either had to cut some shit or let it drown and take me down with it. And so that's why I got rid of Vail, because it was too much. It was too much and it was too far gone for me to save. And so the backpedaling of that made me feel like, oh no, like I was so good and now I'm terrible. But realizing now in hindsight, like that was the smartest thing I've ever done, because it was not that bad, and it was probably exactly the momentum that I needed to do the right thing by my business, and my business being behind the veil. Like, I am weddings. That's what it is. And I, you know, on the first, we'll have our commercial come out, and talk more about salon stuff, but, like, at the heart of who I am and who my company is, like, we do hair and makeup for weddings. And so I recognized that and wanted to let that flourish and be the center of attention versus trying to cram so many other things into it. And so it was okay that I let that go. And then knowing that being back to like Unit G and the little three chair thing, I knew it wasn't going to be forever, but I needed to like pick it up and get it back in the black and be successful for a minute before I did anything else. And that's whenever, you know, the three of us were like little baby cocoons. Like, we were butterflies that were, our wings were like busting through the walls, and I was like, all right, it's time. Like, we gotta find a new space. And that probably took about 6 months, like, because it needed to be perfect. It needed to be a perfect location. It needed to be the right size, not too big, not too small, blah, blah, blah. And whenever I found the space that I'm in, it was probably it's the first place that I saw, actually. And my commercial real estate agent showed it to me, and I was like, fuck no. Absolutely not. We are coming from 900 square feet, and this is like almost 4,000 square feet. No. And then sure enough, as if I didn't just relive this like however many years ago, I saw a couple more spaces and then went back. I kept going back to that space because I was like, it is terrifying, but maybe I can make it work. And I kept making like outlandish requests as far as like the negotiation for the lease and all these things, knowing damn well that if I were the landlord, I would have said no to all this shit. But I was like, if he says yes, maybe I can make it work. We'll see how it goes. And apparently nobody else was as ballsy as I was. So eventually he said yes. And, you know, that was August 1st of 2019 that I got the keys. And then October 4th, we were open.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real quick turnaround.
I think one of the things that, you know, people listening to this podcast should take away is what you just said about cutting bait when you need to.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the hardest takeaways for a lot of business owners that I work with, that they can't let go.
Yeah.
Because it's something that they've built from the ground up. It's something that they've nurtured. And then they have such a tough time getting rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they realize that by getting rid of it, that was probably the best thing that they ever did strategically.
Dead weight, yeah.
Right? Absolutely. And then that allowed you to then focus on picking up this 4,000 square foot building, mm-hmm, to now being where you are today.
Yeah, and I think that just because you do it once doesn't necessarily make it easy every time. Like, I'm in the middle of not necessarily cutting dead weight, but delegating, which I think is a version of letting go, because that is, I am such a control freak. And I, now that I know like my systems and everything is perfect and how I like them, I can't do all of it anymore. Like, I need to have a receptionist now. I need to have other people with hands in the pot, which is terrifying, but it's happening. And I think that's really important to note, is that if it scares you, then it's probably the right thing.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, another thing that you said that I really appreciate about you, and you've said this, like, I'm trying to think of the phrase that you've said to me over the years a million times. You're like, so I have this thing to tell you that I've been working on. And I'm probably going to die, but it's going to be worth it.
Something like that. I have a stupid idea. Let's see if, Let's see if we can make it work.
Yeah. Like, you're the queen of, I've got this stupid idea. Mm-hmm. Let me see what I can do with it. You don't let those ideas go unattempted if they can work.
Yeah. I think, just as a little fun side note, I think one of my favorite things about Jeremy, my boyfriend, for people that don't know, is that he is probably one of the very few people in my life that is has never once been afraid of that phrase from me. Because, like, ordinarily, like, if I have a ridiculous idea, it's not just like, let's paint the, you know, kitchen pink. It's, let's open a space in Austin and just see how it goes.
Yeah. Like,
we can figure it out on the way out. Like, yeah. Whatever. But, yeah, I think, I don't know, we only live once, and if it goes badly, like, what's the worst that can happen? Whatever.
Yeah, and that's, know? But it's such, I think so many people do get caught up in the, and, like, the fear of what could happen, and if you hadn't left that shoebox and gone into the new space, you may not have met some of the people who allow you to do the things you do now, or allow you, are going to allow you to do the things that you would do in the future. And so, like, if you hadn't asked the, you know, so when you get into that, like, butterfly effect of taking that leap and not just letting it live in what if land,
right?
You get this really cool life that you dreamed up, but I don't think you could have seen the effect.
For sure.
That I think each had on the other.
I agree. I think that's probably one of the things that makes it so easy for me to jump is that I don't necessarily think it all the way through. So I'm like, this sounds like it could be good. Quick, like, synopsis.
Let's just do the thing.
Yeah. It's fine. But, yeah, I think going back to what I was saying about, like, the backpedaling part and being, like, we had some seriously awesome stuff happening right before the pandemic. Like, I had a traveling hair and makeup team in New England, and I had one in Florida, and it was so close to being good. And then everything happened, and I could have made it work, but not without losing sanity. Like, Florida is drastically different from Rhode Island as far as, like, regulations and mandates, and then you throw in Virginia, and I was just like, this is too much. So I had to shut them down, and that sucks, but we're back up and running again, and now we're opening a traveling team in Austin, Texas. So, I mean, there you go.
Yeah.
Just keep going.
Yeah.
Is that breaking news?
It is breaking news. Uh-huh. You guys are the first to hear it.
That was the thing that she called me to tell me about when...
That is half the thing. I'm not going to talk about the other thing.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
We're going to wait on that one.
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah.
But that's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, if you don't try... Joey on the Lollies podcast talked about it a lot. Like, if you don't try, you just live your whole life not doing it and wondering, what if I had done that thing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's like a kind of sad existence.
Absolutely. It's much more sad than saying, shit, I fucked that up, but let's try again. You know, like,
right.
I would much rather have those experiences, good or bad, versus the what if. It's not fun.
What's been the hardest part of all of it? Look at, like, the last however many years, like, beyond, like, trying to fill your cup, which I know is, you know, breakfasts at Doc Taylor's sometimes help sometimes. But
we'll pencil that in August.
Yeah, it'll happen.
Someday.
Yeah. What's been the hardest part of, like, going from Hair by Liz to Darling and Dapper with all your stylists and your weddings and... your assistants and your...
I think the hardest part is a juxtaposition between knowing that I cannot shut this up in my brain, like, I can't stop, because it's just, it's ingrained, it's who I am, I can't ever slow down or not grow. And on the flip side of that, like, not really seeing my kids as much as most, you know, like, it's hard enough whenever you're sharing custody, even though I have them 93% of the time, when what we do is so heavily involved in the weekend time frame, it's like, it's challenging to make myself feel like I am not a shit mom. Like, I know what I'm doing is for the best for everyone, especially in the beginning, and being able to get out and do something positive and having not only something to show for it, but like something to have my kids look up to me for. But I think it's the waiting game. Like, they're not old enough to appreciate that or even understand half of why or what or how. But at least being able to hang on to that for whenever the times are hard and I miss them and I don't, and I'm frustrated because I'm busy and it's like, you know, 8:30 at night on a Tuesday and I'm still writing fucking emails and contracts and stuff and they want to go out to dinner or do something. It's like, that's probably the hardest part.
But going back and when they read your book, whenever it is that you publish your book, mm-hmm. they're going to appreciate all of those stumbling things and stumbling blocks that you had along the way and yeah. all the hustle that you had. I think that's the differentiating factor for a lot of folks is having that hustle to keep going mm-hmm. and keep, you know, breaking down future walls and knowing the unknown, like what you just said about, I have this idea, conceptually it sounds great, I'm going to run with it, right? And then it turns into something.
Right.
And then seeing that evolve into other aspects is what is going to propel your growth going forward, mm-hmm. right? And your kids are going to see that and say, well, if my mom can do it, hopefully I can do it too, because I've got some of that DNA in me.
Right.
Yeah.
When I think about, so Liz's kids are Lyric and River. I think about, like, Lyric and her, like, empathy, and she knows everything about everyone, and she will do whatever she can to help most anyone. Mm-hmm. Don't know where she gets that from at all. You know what I mean?
It catches me by surprise, too. I'm always, like, in awe of that kid. It's crazy.
Well, and River is the one who'll try it once.
Oh, that's for sure.
Uh-huh, I know. Yeah. So, like, they're taking, with maybe even, like, without your knowledge, mm-hmm. these things that they see you doing. They may not understand the business side or, like, why you have to work as much as you do, but they're taking these leap, like, they're seeing these things that you do and that you put into place in your own life.
Yeah.
And they're becoming teeny tiny versions of that, and that's really special. So I also have that same feeling about my kids all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, I hadn't looked at my email in 3 days, and I was like, I gotta answer my email. Piper's like, can we just like watch a show? And I'm like, no, I really gotta answer these emails. And I had been hanging with her all weekend, like to my, like whatever. But like, no, like if I want to see you the rest of the week, I need to
right.
do things now. And it does become so hard. But then when Piper tells me what she wants to be when she grows up, she doesn't want to be a social media manager. She says, maybe a photographer. But everything that she says is some form of entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
I want to own my own bakery. I want to be a fashion designer. I want to maybe be a photographer if I have to. Like, whatever. Like, it's... they see what it gives back to you, not just what you put into it. Mm-hmm. And so there's something really special about that when we can, like, breed little teeny tiny small business owners.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know?
I would argue that that fills your cup.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
some ways.
Oh, for sure.
Right.
Lyric has, gosh, since day one of her being able to speak, has always said that she wants to be a farmer.
No, I right. see it.
She wants to be a farmer, but whenever you ask more questions about like what that means to her, she wants to care for things. She wants mm-hmm. things to grow and thrive under her watch, and I think that that is probably... it's just one of those things where you're like, damn it, I did not see that coming, but
yeah,
right on.
But that's also kind of what you do.
I know.
Mm-hmm. You know? Like, yep. that is what you have done, being just you with Hair by Liz,
yep.
to Darling and Dapper, or to Behind the Veil, to Veil Studios, to mm-hmm. Behind the Veil again, to Darling and Dapper, to everything else that you do. And so all that we can hope, like, as entrepreneurs, is they take that those little teeny tiny things mm-hmm. that we feel, like, in our soul and acknowledge, like, the mental and life benefits
yeah.
from doing them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really special. What's been the best part? I asked you the hardest part. What's the best part?
Oh, probably the connections that I've made. And whether or not they stick around and I can also benefit from these relationships, or if it's just the knowledge that, like, I have made an impact on somebody, I think that's probably, hands down, the best part. Yeah.
I think I have one more question. That's such a good way to end it, because I've been holding on to it since the beginning. Yeah. What would you tell your teacher at school that told you you couldn't make a business off of updos?
I don't think it's anything that I said that was profound to him. I think it's what I told myself.
No, and but like, what would you? No, what would you have?
Oh,
like today, if you could
go
back.
Yeah, knowing what you know now.
Knowing what you know now.
I think that I would just say, like, even if you feel like this is the best advice to help somebody, you got to keep it to yourself. Unless you're only going to support. Because you never know what people are capable of. And unless the goal is to light a fire, then don't bother.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what it did for me, but that's only because I'm a Scorpio and I'm an asshole. Like, don't tell me what not to do, because you know damn well tomorrow that's what's going to be happening. But I think that I was lucky in the fact that I work that way. I operate on that level. I think that had anybody else, literally anybody else, they might have, you know, put their dream to bed and not pursued anything like that. And that sucks. Because if your goal as a teacher, as, you know, the owner of this place that offers education to be able to better yourself, you just need to be supportive, because you have no idea what people are capable of. And
that's funny, because that's advice that you give everybody, knowing you.
I think that's just a coincidence, probably.
I think it's probably not. I think it's you. When I call you and tell you, hey, I'm going to start this, like, thing, and maybe it'll work, and maybe it'll suck, and you're like, hey, cool, you want to do my stuff for a while? Yeah, sure, man. What?
Yeah.
It's not why I called.
You got to give opportunity. Words do.
Yeah. And, like, and that's what's always been so cool about you. You do it for your friends. You do it for your clients. You do it for the stylists that walk through your door and want to just, like, try something.
Mm-hmm.
It is cool to be an empowering entrepreneur when so many people are all about themselves.
I will say that there's like a little asterisk to that. I'm never going to guide somebody that where I know it's going to like go down in flames.
Well, no, you have to, that is
but you
not
do
a
want
good friend.
That's not a good friend.
No.
And if I know that you don't want bangs deep down, I'm not giving you bangs.
No. That is so, please don't give me straight bangs.
Well, you had to try it once.
I did, and it wasn't bad. I just don't style my hair. Anyway, so, thank you for coming to hang out with us
Absolutely.
Today.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.